for his fine work today playing that CD and engineering this whole thing. Elif Garis for her fine work producing this show. Carla Mari is coming up after the news. And I will see you next week. We're going to be talking, we've got a short show, only an hour. I'll be talking about London House, Mr. Kelly's, and the glory days of Chicago saloons. So please stay tuned. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. It is 11:01, and the news is brought to you by Walt's Food Centers, and it's delivered by the guy you were just listening to telling fascinating stories, Roger Badish.
Thank you very much, sir. Cloudy, 54 right now at O'Hare. We'll find out soon enough if former President Obama did indeed have the phones at Trump Tower bugged, as claimed by President Trump over the weekend. Officials say there was an investigation into possible Russian interference in the election, and Russian diplomats are routinely surveyed, observed in their operations. But there's no firm evidence that members of the Trump campaign were ever spied on. ABC's KFSN-TV spoke with Republican Congressman Devin Nunes of California. He's the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, says he's glad people are finally paying attention to the threat posed by Russia.
A year ago I came out and said that this was the biggest intelligence failure since 9/11. The Obama administration wasn't interested in that, and they didn't become interested in Russia until after they lost the election and looked for someone to blame it on.
Congressman Devin Nunes of California. Humanitarian groups in the Iraqi city of Mosul say the latest push to recapture the ISIS stronghold has left hundreds of thousands of people with no way out. People have been attempting to flee the fighting, but for many, it's too dangerous. Jeremy Courtney is an American charity worker in Iraq. He says it's a dire situation.
People are trapped in by sniper fire and mortars and airstrikes from above. People are starving to death. If we don't reach them, they simply will not be able to reach us.
Chicago nearly went a full week without a fatal shooting, but as WGN's Veronica Carter tells us, another murder has happened.
The city had passed the milestone Sunday morning for the first time in more than 5 years. However, that was before the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office reported the homicide of 22-year-old Antoine Watkins from multiple gunshot wounds. Police say they found him lying face down Saturday in a vacant lot about a block from where he lived in the Austin neighborhood. Before that fatal shooting, the last one had happened on February 26th. There have been more than 100 murders so far this year. Veronica Carter, WGN News.
19-year-old man trying to break up a fight was injured in the process. WGN-TV's Courtney Guzman reports it happened in a restaurant parking lot in the 3600 block of North Pulaski early this morning.
Police say this 19-year-old was slashed in the face while attempting to break up a fight between a man and two women. Police say the man who was arguing with those women produced a knife and cut the 19-year-old on the right side of his face.
Love the movies, but all these high ticket prices getting you down? Buffalo Grove Theater has the cure for you. Every Tuesday.
And the man is in stable condition. No one has been arrested. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Did you know that your child's teeth contain precious stem cells? Did you also know that those same stem cells can be safely recovered and stored for use in stem cell therapies and treatments throughout their life? Here at BioEden, we specialize in banking your child's stem cells so that they can be available whenever and wherever they need them. Call BioEden today at 888-315-3843. That's 888-315-3843, or visit our website at BioEden.com. That's BioEden.com, and ask for your $1 trial.
Love the movies, but all these high ticket prices getting you down? Buffalo Grove Theater has the cure for you. Every Tuesday, every ticket is only $5. Yes, that's right. Every Tuesday, no matter the showtime, it's just $5 a ticket. Pricing excludes 3D shows, special showings, and premieres. Visit their website, bgtheater.com, for details. Buffalo Grove Theater, giving your pocketbook a break and where you're always a winner.
Checking WGN Sports, Purdue beat Northwestern 69-65, close game up to the end. They now will play in the Big Ten tournament on Thursday. Missouri Valley Conference winners Wichita State over Illinois State. In other games, Iowa over Penn State, Wisconsin beating Minnesota. The Horizon League tournament, second round playoff game goes to UIC over Green Bay. UIC now moves on to the next round. In hockey action, Hawks hosting Anaheim on Thursday. Judge got your pregame at 7. Face-off at 7:30 with John Weideman and Troy Murray on 720 WGN at WGNradio.com. Exhibition baseball, Cubs in Texas tie at 9-all. Arizona beats the Sox tomorrow. It'll be San Diego and the Sox, Cubs and the Angels. Let's check WGN traffic. Esmeralda Leon.
Southbound I-57 at Sibley, we have reports of a rollover crash there, so we're starting to see some delays build up. On the rest of the roads, the Edens 15 both ways. Kennedy is clear. The Eisenhower is looking good as well. Stevenson, you had a stall blocking the ramp to southbound LaGrange. That is all gone. Clear roads on both sides now. The Dan Ryan, you had a report of an accident on the 71st Street on ramp. That is all gone as well. You do have road work starting up on the outbound side of the Dan Ryan, 87th to the merge. Two left lanes are closed. On the inbound side, you have the same thing from the merge to 87th. Lakeshore Drive, seeing just a couple delays in the downtown area. Bishop Ford clear, and as I said, I-57 dealing with a report of a rollover crash on the southbound side at Sibley. On the tolls right now, we're not seeing any major issues. 294, a little slow around I-80. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app, pre-approved by Acunet Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Esmeralda Leon, WGN Traffic Central.
And your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. It might get some scattered sprinkles overnight. Nothing to write home about. Cloudy, windy, low around 46 overnight. Should have about a 40% chance of showers after about 10 tomorrow morning. Cloudy, windy, high near 58. Tuesday, mostly sunny, windy, high near 54. Right now, 53 at O'Hare and Morton Grove, and along the lakefront, 54 at Midway. Lake Michigan water temperatures, 39. Your winds out of the south at 21, gust up to 28. I'm Roger Battish in the WGN Newsroom, ready to join the conversation live whenever a story changes on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you escape.
Follow Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Radio theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special 3-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the legendary 720 WGN. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
This is program 160 of the WGN Radio Theater. We're here on a Sunday night. It's March 5th, and we're feeling pretty good.
Well, I am. How
yeah?
are you feeling?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Mike Estella, our executive producer, is here.
Hello.
What's up, Mike? How are you? Everything
I'm good?
Good?
Yep.
All right.
Mike's here. It's a big night.
Yep, and we're gonna bring in Dan Jaffe and Dave Weiske from Oil Dry, parent company to Cat's Pride, in just a moment. Because they're going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners, right?
Very lucky.
But I want to tell you about our classic radio shows tonight. We have Fibber, McGee, and Molly from 1940, then Inner Sanctum Mysteries, and then Dangerous Assignment. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night. And this program is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the action film The $6 Billion Man, which is a remake of the 1970s TV series The $6 Million Man.
Well, inflation.
But adjusted for inflation.
Oh, okay.
You beat me to the punch there.
I'm sorry,
there.
I didn't realize
yeah,
you were going to
sure
say that.
Yeah, sure you are. And the winner will get a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati, some of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
Okay, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of 2012's comedy, Ted.
You know, this place looks great.
Oh, thanks, man. It's all IKEA. Did the whole place for $47.
Nice.
Yeah.
How are the neighbors?
That's kind of like your place, Carl.
Yeah, IKEA.
IKEA, $47.
I can't put anything together from IKEA, but I like
that. I thought you built a dartboard.
But it wasn't from IKEA.
Fair
enough. No. All right, so the number to call, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back with our winner after these words. Graciously.
Welcome back. This is the 160th show of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and we're going to play that clip one more time.
You know, this place looks great.
Oh, thanks, man. It's all IKEA. Did the whole place for $47.
Nice.
Yeah.
How are the neighbors?
IKEA. We've got Howard on the line from Aurora. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Lise.
How are you?
I hope you guys are doing good, too.
We're doing real good. Good to hear from you. And we're glad you got through, and we're hoping that you recognize that actor.
Isn't it Carl's grouchy brother? Or no, it's Donnie's grouchy brother, Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg. Everybody who stays around Carl for too long gets a little bit grouchy. So
grouchy.
I completely understand that. Howard, you are a winner. We're thrilled to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. It's for $25. Of course, they are home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, my favorite deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnati's.com. And thank you so much for calling.
Is there any other pizza in the room, sound? I wasn't
no, aware. That's the only one. So we're all good.
Thanks, Howard.
Take care.
Appreciate it. All right. Every month, the sponsor of our program, Cat's Pride, and the president and CEO of the company, Dan Jaffe, comes in here along with Dave Weiske, who is the vice president of customer success. And he comes in here, and they give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners. And they're here today. Let's say hello to Dan and Dave. What's up, guys?
Hey, Carl. Carl, Lisa, how are you?
We're good.
Happy 160.
Yeah, 160 shows Lisa's put up with me.
I know, and we are almost at our two-year anniversary, so we are going to celebrate. Carl says I'm not allowed to bake, but other than that, we are going to celebrate.
We don't want any food poisoning. You know, so that's why Lisa's not going to bake.
Yeah.
I'm going to bake something and then forget about
it. That's fine. I'm not going to argue you.
So Dan and Dave, thanks for coming back in. We're going to draw a lucky winner in just a few minutes. But let's talk a little bit about Cat's Pride and also another brand that we want to just talk about a little bit, a special to our listeners, right?
Well, yeah. Can I tell you a secret?
Yes.
And you promise only your listeners need to
only
be
our listeners.
In on this secret.
Only the listeners.
Right.
But, you know, every month we talk about Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care, and it really is the best performing lightweight litter. But a little known secret is we make 80% of the private label lightweight made and sold in retailers in America. And what private label means is, for instance, we make Target's Boots and Barkley. We make Meijer's Meijer brand. So when you go into a store and you see their name on the package, we make 80% of that, and we do make Boots and Barkley, and we make a whole host of other retailers.
Yeah, that's right. We're in Jewel, Shopko, Roundy's, Albertsons, Super Value. Again, this is not the Cat's Pride brand, but these are private label brands, and they're 50% lighter. 50% lighter. And this, you know, you talk about the carbon footprint. We talked about this in previous shows. Last year, just Cat's Pride alone was 1,100 trucks we took off the road. So this combined, we're thinking about going well over 2,000 trucks in this next fiscal year for Oil Dry, which is really exciting.
Wow.
And Lisa, you've got a Boots and Barkley story for us.
I do. And I just want to clarify one thing, Dan, that this is the exact same product, even though it is a private label. You are getting the exact same quality of product.
You're getting what's known as national brand equivalent. We have to keep proprietary like fragrance or maybe, but you're getting a phenomenal product, low in dust. You talk about it, you buy it.
Well, so that's what happened. My daughter came just this weekend with her cat, with his cat, her cat. His name is Flynn. And she said,
like
please,
Flynn,
can you run over to Target? I like the Boots and Barkley brand. And I said, sure. And I ran over there just on Friday and I bought it and I was so thrilled because it was only $6.99 at Target. And it came in a white jug.
How is that even possible?
And I thought, and she said, it's actually cheaper and it clumps the best. And that's what she told me. So, you know, I thought, I'm going against Cat's Pride.
$6.99 for a full for a full jug.
But yeah. I'm so excited. I really wasn't going against Cat's Pride. I was buying Cat's Pride without even realizing.
You can't get away from us, even if you try.
I'm not trying.
Okay, but really, the great news is we are doing this nationwide. We started it with Target. We're going to be rolling it out to all of our retail partners where they used to retail it for $8.99 against the old heavy one, which was $6.99. And it was selling, but we decided if we could match that $6.99 price, now who is going to choose to take home 20 pounds when they can take home 10?
Right.
Who's going to choose to take home a 42-pound pail when they can take home either a 17 or a 21-pound pail?
And the great thing about being half the weight, it's not half the uses. It's the same amount
equivalent.
Of uses.
Yeah, the volume is equivalent to the heavy.
Which is amazing. It's just in the manufacturing and how you're doing it, what goes in there and all that.
And what I would say to your listeners is if you're – we've never found a user who takes a tray and puts it on a scale and weighs it in. So they're not using it by weight. What they do is they fill up to a certain line in the tray, 2-3 inches. So we give you all that volume. It's all the fills. It's just half the weight.
Yeah, and the problem for our customers, when they go to the store, they're looking at these tags and they say, this is how much per pound. And that's where the education is a little more difficult because they think they're not getting the quality of their dollar and the economics when they see something per pound equivalent to a 20-pounder to a 10-pounder when they're getting the same amount of product.
And they're not having to break their back taking it to the car and back into their home. So let's zone in on this now. It's Boots and Barkley. It's at all Target. Is it at any other stores right now or just at Target?
No, that's their brand.
Okay, so it's the Target brand. Go to Target. You can get Boots and Barkley, excuse me, and it's only $6.99 a jug.
And it comes in fragrance-free and in fragrance. I bought the fragrance-free. That was my preference, but there are options.
Very good. And now you're rolling something else out across the country, did you say?
Well, what's happening is we're rolling out this $6.99 price point.
Oh,
and so everybody's jumping onto this because they all see the same thing, that if you level the price, the sales are just exploding.
Well, I mean, that's really a great price. It used to be $8.99. It's now $6.99.
Yes.
So go to Target and pick up Boots and Barkley at only $6.99. Very good. Did you want to talk about other ways that people can get Cat's Pride?
Sure. Yeah, and I think one big thing is we talk about Walmart. We just came back from a huge conference with them, and they are exploding. I mean, they spent $3.3 billion on Jet.com. So they're talking about branding Jet.com, Walmart.com, those two, they're not going to be merged. They're going to be separate, but they're going to be pitching all of our products that we sell currently in the store. So the whole Cat's Pride portfolio is there, and the Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care, as well as Cat's Pride products, we have all those online, and the numbers are booming. It's been 4 weeks since we looked at the statistics. Last time I looked, we're up 200% just in that arena.
Wow.
Then you have Amazon.com, Chewy.com. So e-commerce is just, it's
no reason to even go to the store to buy Cat's Pride or any of your portfolio of kitty litter products. Just you can go to Amazon and get it.
Right. And then the brick and mortar is obviously still alive. So you've got all the traditional ones that, like we mentioned earlier, Jewel, Shopko, Roundies. We've got Kroger, Publix, Meijer. We're in all those stores. So we've got a huge block in the majority of those stores. And please encourage everyone to go on out if you're out there. But if you can't, hit the e-commerce sector. It's outstanding.
Now, all of our listeners have an opportunity to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And the spokesperson for Cat's Pride kitty litter, the ultimate care, is Catherine Heigl. You see her commercials on television all the time. And Dan's here and Dave's here, and we're going to pick a lucky winner. So let's do that right now.
We absolutely are. If we can get a drum roll, please.
Here we go.
Okay.
And the lucky winner this month is Elizabeth Kincaid of Orland Park, Illinois, and her two cats, Bob and Steve.
All right.
Yay.
So she's the lucky winner, and if you want to send in a picture of your kitty cat and enter for next month, do that right now. You can do it all month. Just send a picture of your kitty cat along with the cat's name, your name, city, and state, and send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Dan Jaffe, thank you so much. Dave Weiske, thank you so much. We really appreciate your support of this show and for coming in here and being so generous every month and giving away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, and we love our partnership
thank
with the
you
WGN
so much.
Radio
thank
Theater.
Thank you so much.
So again, happy 160.
Yeah, 160 shows, and it's time for Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Everybody loves Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Let's go back to February 6, 1940. Here's part one of Fibber's birthday party on Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Makers of of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, Billy Mills Orchestra, and our new vocal feature, The King's Men. The worst way to start the day off is to get out of bed on the wrong side, especially if your bed is right next to an open window. So here, climbing back through the window in his pajamas, holding his ears against the cold, as his wife holds her ears against his language, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
That rat of an architect that planned a window right next to a bed. Here, help me get in through this window, Molly.
Oh, you poor dear.
Oh, that dirty... McGee,
watch your language. And shut the window. It's cold in here.
It's colder out there. Dead rat.
I'm so sorry, dearie. How'd you happen to fall out?
I had a nightmare. All night long, I dreamt that I couldn't get to sleep. What a night. It was terrible.
Well, that's too bad.
Well,
hurry up and get your clothes on, dearie. I'll have breakfast ready in a jiffy.
And I'll tell you right now, Mrs. McGee, I'm not going to shave today.
You're not?
No, I'm not, and that's definite, see?
All right, sweetheart. I don't blame you a bit.
Well, Huh? What was that?
I said I don't blame you a bit. You're just as handsome to me with or without a shave.
Well, every other time I wanted to go without shaving, you says, get in there and shave.
Now, never mind what I used to say. I could be wrong, couldn't I?
You could be wrong. Hey, I'm going back to bed. I'm still dreaming.
No, come on to breakfast. Just put on your robe and slippers.
What? You mean you're going to let me come to breakfast in my bathrobe?
Certainly. And here's the morning paper. You can read it whilst I make the toast.
Well, gee. Thanks, Molly. What are we going to have this morning? Same old wheatsy bitsies, I suppose.
Well, it was you that insisted on our getting the wheatsy bitsies, dearie.
It was?
Yes. You said they'd improve your performance at first base.
Well, I got a nasty note from Judge Landis. And I ain't the only one, either. I'm tired of wheatsy bitsies, Molly. Why don't we have wheat cakes and sausages once in a while?
That's just what we're having this morning.
Huh?
And I got some genuine Vermont maple syrup, too.
Oh, boy, Vermont maple syrup. When did you get that?
Yesterday.
I didn't see it.
Well, you wouldn't have recognized it. It was packed by the Farley Packing Company and labeled Republican Sack.
Dad rat.
Now, what's the matter? I thought that was a pretty good joke.
Yeah, but you know how radio is. Now, I gotta think up one to annoy the Democrats. You really don't mind if I don't shave, Molly?
Not a bit.
Don't want me to shave at all?
No, I just want you to be comfortable and happy. Now, come to breakfast.
Okay, wait till I shave.
Answer the door, dearie. I want to start fixing the wheat cake.
Okay, I'll get it. Who can be around here at this time?
Oh, there, McGee. Good morning.
Don't give me that cheery good morning stuff, Gildersleeve. If you can't be your old sourpuss self, don't talk to me.
My old sourpuss self, eh? Yeah, that's very good. My, that's a handsome bathrobe you have on there, McGee.
Yes.
It is a bathrobe, isn't it? Oh, and that's a neat idea there, using a piece of old clothesline for a belt. I imagine it's very comfortable.
Well, you're wrong. It ain't. It cuts like a knife.
McGee, breakfast is nearly ready. Oh, good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Good morning, Mrs. McGee. A lovely day, isn't it?
It is not. It's terrible. I never see such a lousy day.
By the way, McGee, the reason I stopped by was to bring you these ducks.
Ducks?
Yes. A friend of mine went out hunting yesterday and gave me more than I could use. Here you are.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, forget it. After all, there's nothing like having good neighbors, is there? Well, good day, Mrs. McGee. Good day, Fibber.
Goodbye, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Hey, what's got into that guy, anyway? I think he ought to go see a skin specialist.
What's the matter with his skin?
Oh, it's getting so thick I can't insult him anymore. Well, throw them moth-eaten mallards out in the garbage can and let's have breakfast, Molly.
All right, dearie. I'll throw them out right away. Anything you say.
Good, and I got to... What was that?
I said anything you say, McGee. You know best.
Oh, no, I don't, Molly. Not always.
Why, of course you do.
I do?
Certainly.
Well, okay. Let's keep the ducks, then. No use throwing away good food, is there?
No, and I'm sorry I suggested it.
Oh, forget it, Molly. We all make mistakes. You're just impulsive.
I know. Now, come on and have your breakfast. I've got some nice country sausage.
Can't we have a minute's quiet in this house? Here I am, half sick with the indigestion, and I can't even eat my wheat cakes and pork sausage in peace.
Calm yourself, McGee. I'll see who it is. Come in.
Dad,
hello there, daughter. Hello, Johnny. How you fixed for Valentine's? I got some beauties here with cupids on them, but I'd advise you not to take them.
What's the matter with the cupids?
Oh, too risque, daughter. Kids ain't dressed decent.
Oh.
Eh?
Don't believe we want any old-timer. Personally, I can never decide between the comic ones and the sentimental ones. Never know whether to wow 'em or woo 'em.
That's pretty good, Johnny. And that's exactly the way I hear it.
It is?
Yep.
Detail for detail?
Yep.
Word for word?
Yep. Well, not quite, Johnny. The way I heard it, one feller says to t'other feller, says, I see where they had quite a cold snap down south. I'll say they did, says t'other feller. Got so cold the boll weevils were swapping a bale of cotton for a pound of wool. Say, didn't you get up kind of early today, Johnny?
Oh, no, this is not early for me. I used to get up at 4 o'clock when I was a bugler in the Army.
Bugler, eh?
Yep, and a good one, too, if I do say so myself. Even got decorated by General Pershing. And as he was pinning the medal on me, he says, boys, he says, there's nobody in the Army that knows the bugle like McGee. Bugle Knows McGee, I was known as in them days. Bugle Knows McGee, the brainiest blower of the battle bazooka that ever bulldozed a battalion of brave boys to bolt bed and blanket for bath and breakfast by blaring a bedlam of bellows on the brass bagpipe, bringing bravos and bouquets by my brilliant performance of ballads at banquets, benefits, and barbecues, and boosted as the Beethoven of the bugle from Mr. Brahms way back in Europe. What's that I smell?
Your cakes and syrup.
That's the first portion of Fibber, McGee, and Molly from February 6, 1940. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. 36 on a Sunday night, and we're here every single Saturday and Sunday bringing you all your favorite classic radio shows. Jack Benny, The Shadow, Inner Sanctum, Boston Blackie,
and
The Whistler.
Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Fibber, McGee, and Molly, yeah. That's what we have
it's
for you
one.
Right now. Jim and Marion Jordan, they were a real-life couple. They were married in real life, and they actually...
And liked it.
Yeah, they actually were from Peoria, Illinois. Well, is that right? Or is that where Johnson's Wax was? Johnson's Wax, I think, is in Peoria, Illinois. Yeah, and that's where... the sponsor was, but they were just fantastic. They were on the air, I don't know, 1935 all the way to 1950, like 20 something years. A television series actually came on the radio, came on television too, but it wasn't Jim and Marianne Jordan. It was two other people. It didn't do that well, but they just thrived on radio. It was such a fun, folksy radio program. And we're listening to an episode now from February 6, 1940, called Fibber's Birthday. Here's the conclusion to Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Boy, were them cakes and sausage good. I'm so dad-ratted stuffed I could hardly get dressed. Look, I can't even get my belt around me.
That's the strap off your wristwatch, dearie.
Oh, yeah. I wondered what made that buckle tick like that.
I see you shaved, too.
Yeah, I didn't want this Orson Welles guy to get the idea he'd started a fad. Oh, boy, am I stuffed. Well, come on, let's go for a walk, Molly.
All right, dearie. Let me help you on with your coat.
Huh? Oh.
There. Well. My, you look so well in a mackinaw. But I guess you're just the outdoor type.
Oh, go on, am I really? Oh, shucks, honey. Hey, where's my other mitten?
Dear. McGee, if you lose those mittens once more, I'll have to put the string back on them.
Okay, I'll be careful. Let's go, Molly.
Oh, my, my, it's lovely.
Hey, don't walk so fast, Molly. I'm too full of breakfast.
All right. Here, let's hold hands.
Huh? Oh, okay. You know, we ought to do this.
Look, McGee. Huh? Here comes Mrs. Uppington.
Uh-oh.
Look at her walking along with her nose up in the air.
She holds her head so high, she's got a double chin on the back of her neck.
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to stop and talk to the old cat. She's... Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington? So nice to see you.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. McGee? And Mr. McGee?
Hi, Uppy. What you limping for, Uppy? You got a Charlie horse?
Well, if she has, I'll bet it's a thoroughbred.
Well, it's really a result of trying to form our Wistful Vista Concert Orchestra.
Oh.
Yes, you see, when Maestro Mills took me to reclaim some of the band instruments from the, now what do you call those quaint little novelty stores with the three big grapefruit over the door?
Could they perchance be hawk shops?
Oh, yes, Harksha. Oh, my. Yes. Oh, you know, I always believed those were some sort of fruit and vegetable stores.
Well, they are kind of uppy in a way. That's where you go to trade your old 10-carat turnip for 5 berries. Oh, boy, am I hot tonight. Well, what's that got to do with your limp, uppy?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, really, I'm almost ashamed to tell you. It's so ridiculous.
Oh, come on.
Well, you see, the back seat of my town car was simply filled with band instruments, and I... Well, somehow I got trapped in a tuba. Oh, really, such a time as we had. And to extricate me, Dr. Mills had to play 3 choruses of Ain't You Coming Out. I'm such a silly girl. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye.
I wish he'd got caught in a violin instead of a tuba.
Huh?
I was all set with a crack about the cat and the fiddle. Well,
come on, Molly, keep walking. I'm cold. If we don't get
Oh, hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, hello there, folks. Out for a little constitutional?
No, just taking a walk.
Is that so? Well, walking is great stuff, all right.
Yeah.
But that isn't the way I get my exercise.
Uh-oh. Folks, in the year 1900 A.D., a little child was born. And as he toddled across the kitchen floor of a modest little home in Omaha, Nebraska, he saw in his childish imagination a vision. A vision of himself as a grown man still toddling about a kitchen floor. And that floor is your floor, folks. And that man stands before us tonight, Harlow Wilcox. You take it from there, Harpo.
What in the world are you talking about? I was about to tell you how I got my daily exercise.
Oh, well, how do you get your exercise, Mr. Wilcox?
Yes, Harlow. As the Indian chief said to his long-lost brother, who he hadn't seen for 25 years because he'd been working in the mint, posing for pennies, how?
It's simple. Setting up exercises in the morning, a brisk canter through the park, hour or so of handball in the gym, and,
Well, go on. Don't you get any exercise, delivering those big cans of, you know.
Oh, yes, that too. Well, glad to have seen you looking so well, Fibber. Keep it up, pal. We're all proud of you. Well, so long, Molly. Take good care of that old Fibber boy.
Goodbye, Mr. Wilcox.
Imagine that guy. Well, as the president says when they asked him about his third term. Damn. Molly, do you realize he didn't say a word about Johnson's glow coat?
Why, he didn't, did he? Or how marvelous Johnson's self-polishing glow coat is for linoleum floors?
And did you hear how he talked about me? They're proud of me, he says. An old Fibber boy.
Well, I don't see anything wrong in that. We are proud of you.
Why, hey, what is all this anyway?
What's what?
Everybody being so dad-ratted nice to me. First Gildersleeve comes along...
Ah, there. Good day, short, sharp, and ship-shape. Good day to you, my dear.
Hi, Boomer.
Been looking for you charming people. I want to present you with a couple of tickets to the preview of Pinocchio.
Oh, how nice.
Oh, come off of it, Boomer. You don't give nobody nothing. What's the angle?
There is no angle, worm. It's just because I love you, chum. Now let me see. Where'd I put those tickets for Pinocchio? Pinocchio, Pinocchio.
I think it's all a jokeio.
Now let me see. Here's a letter from my nephew, Agamemnon. Says he would have passed the bar examination, but he flunked in dry martinis. Handful of crossword puzzles. Ah, yes. I was saving those for a brainy day. What's this? Oh, here's a funeral notice of an old friend of mine. Poor lad. He was an expert at telling mushrooms from toadstools. He thought. Yes, well, here's a neat little stiletto. Hope to play a game of mumbly-peg on a certain party's epiglottis tonight. Well, well, imagine this. Here they are, two tickets to Pinocchio. Why not at all, my dear. Glad to do it. Always been an admirer of yours and your handsome little husband. Good day.
My handsome little husband. Oh, Molly, come on. What goes on here? I'll get a nasty answer out of somebody if it takes all the king's horses and all the king's men. Are the king's horses here?
No, but the king's men are.
Huh? Oh, that's swell. Folks, we present the king's men, who will sing a beloved old American classic, The King's Men.
He played the bagpipes all day long, E-I-E-I-O. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he played some golf, E-I-E-I-O. A 4-4 here, a 4 there, here, 4 there, forever, what for? Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. He used a putter on the green, E-I-E-I-O. Putt putt here and a putt putt there, here putt there, putt there, putt putt, four four here and four there, here four there, forever, what for? Yeah. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And when he sliced them in the rough, E-I-E-I-O. Cuss cuss here and a cuss cuss there, and here cuss there, where blank blank, putt putt here and a putt putt there, here putt there, putt there, four putt putt, four four here and a four there, and here four there, forever, what for? Yeah. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. He drove the ball clear out of bounds, E-I-E-I-O. A lost ball here and a lost ball there, and here ball there, ball there, where high ball, cuss cuss here and cuss cuss there, here cuss there, where blank blank, putt putt there and a putt putt there, here putt there, putt there, where putt putt, four four here and a four there, and here four there, forever, what for? Yeah. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he had a daughter, E-I-E-I-O. Salesman here, salesman there, Harlow Wilcox everywhere. Lost ball here, lost ball there, here ball there, for high ball, cuss cuss here, and cuss cuss there, here cuss there, for blank blank, putt putt here, and putt putt there, here putt there, putt there, for putt putt, four here, and four there, here four there, forever, what for? Yeah. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, and when he saw the salesman there, E-I-E-I-O. A boom boom here, a bang bang there, here boom there, bang everywhere, buckshot, salesman here, salesman there, Harlow Wilcox everywhere, lost ball here, lost ball there, here ball there, for high ball, cuss cuss here, cuss cuss there, here cuss there, where bang bang, putt putt here, putt putt there, here putt there, putt there, putt putt, putt here, there, here for there, forever, what for?
McGee, we're nearly home. Aren't you feeling any better?
No, I ain't. Dad, granted, why'd you make me eat all them wheat cakes and sausages, Molly?
Wasn't that terrible of me? Oh, I'm such a bad girl to you, aren't I?
Awesome. Hey, I wish I knew what was going on around here. There's so dad-ratted much sweetness and light, I'm getting a little suspicious. What's the matter, Molly?
Oh, here comes that little girl from across the street, McGee.
Good. Maybe I can pick a fight with her.
Now, McGee, pick a fight with somebody your own size.
Well, she's just about the size of the fight I want to pick. Hi, little girl.
Hi, mister. What you doing?
Taking a walk.
Where to?
No place.
Hmm?
I says no place. Not walking anywhere.
Well, gee, then how do you know when you get there, hmm?
Now, listen, sis. I ain't in any mood for a polite chit-chat. Now, let me pass. I gotta finish my walk.
Okay. Can I take a walk with you, please, mister? Hmm? Can I, please? Hmm? I like you.
No, you can't take a walk with me. This is walk for my health.
Oh. Well, remember what Confucius said.
What did Confucius say?
Confucius say, quote, man take long walk, matter of health. Lady take long walk, matter of form, unquote.
I don't believe there ever was a guy named Confucius.
Me either, I bet you.
Huh?
Hmm?
Don't you think Confucius ever lived?
No.
Huh?
No. I think he was the little mandarin who wasn't there, I bet you. Well, so long, mister. Now, don't forget I'm going to marry you when you grow up.
You're gonna marry me when I grow up. When I grow up? Hey, did she say that? Why,
now,
that...
Now, calm yourself. Calm yourself. We're almost home.
Oh,
there's Mr. Gildersleeve's Great Dane. Ah, he's brought you a stick, Mickey. He wants you to throw it for him to fetch back.
I'll throw it for him. Here, Hamlet, give me that stick. I'll throw this so Dad ratted far. By the time he gets back, he'll be a great, 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 great Dane. There. Go fetch it, Hamlet.
Oh, heavenly days, McGee. Look what you did.
Huh?
Broke a wind in Mr. Gildersleeve's house.
Well, Dad ratted, it wasn't my fault. I just threw it where the dog told me to.
You're perfectly right, dearie. That dog should be taught not to give people sticks to throw and break windows with. But just to be safe, we better get in the house.
Oh, let's stay right here. I don't give a darn if I broke Gildersleeve's window. I hope Gildersleeve does get sore. I've been just pining for a crossword from somebody all day.
Well, here he comes, McGee.
This ought to be good. The minute he lands with his right, I'll cross with my left. Give him the old Dempsey one, too. Ooh!
Stop shadowboxing, McGee, before you knock yourself out.
Well, I'm glad I finally got
McGee! Did you break my dining room window?
Well, you see, Mr. Gildersleeve...
Now, let me handle this, Molly. Yes, Gildersleeve, I did bust your window. So what?
It was a piece of a shot if I ever saw one.
You mean?
I'll bet you didn't do it on the first try.
Why, he did too, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, yeah?
That ratted Gildersleeve, I did, I tell you. I just took that stick and wound up like this and let her flicker. Like that. Oh, gee, Gildersleeve, I didn't mean
that
to...
That was splendid, McGee. You've got a wonderful eye.
But, Mr. Gildersleeve, that was the stained glass window in your dining room. Why, it's ruined.
Yes, I know. Shake hands, McGee.
Huh?
If you had to sit at my breakfast table every morning under that stained glass window and see my mother-in-law in technicolor... Well...
Oh, shucks, Gildersleeve.
I'll bet you can't make it 3 out of 3, McGee. Huh? Come on, try it again.
Oh, now, wait a minute there.
Come on, McGee. See if you can hit that little window up there on the left.
Huh?
Upstairs.
Way up there?
Yeah. We'll surprise my wife. She's taking a bath.
Oh, no, thanks, Gilly. I'd like to, but no, I better not.
Oh, scaredy cat.
I ain't either a scaredy cat.
Oh, here, stop it, you two. Control your energy. The marble season will open soon. Just send us a bill for the broken windows, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, no, forget it, folks. I enjoyed it.
What?
Well, thanks a lot, McGee. My, I wish I could throw an old stick like you.
That does it, Molly. That does it. That absolutely does it.
Does what, darling?
And never mind that darling stuff, too, either. I want to know what's got into everybody. Hey... Molly.
Yes?
Look me in the eye.
Yes?
Did you go and buy that fur coat after we decided that it cost too much? Is that why you...
No, dearie, I didn't buy it.
Oh, I guess you didn't. That wouldn't explain why Boomer and Wilcox and everybody's been so dad-ratted nicey-nice. Molly, for the love of Mike, what is it? I can't stand all this stuff. Everything is too pleasant. I ain't used to it. Please, Molly, what is it?
Heavenly days, McGee, don't you know?
What?
Why, this is your birthday.
My birth. Oh. Why don't somebody tell me these things?
Well, happy birthday, McGee. Do you feel any older?
No. The only thing that makes me feel old is when I think of the wonderful inventions that have been made since I was born. Automobiles, radio, television. I'll bet one of these days we have television sets right in our own automobiles.
Oh, no.
Yeah, imagine driving along in your own car and seeing Fibber McGee's face right on your dashboard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Right next to the choke.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night at this same time. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
All right, that's Fibber, McGee, and Molly, February 6, 1940. It was Fibber's birthday. That's why everybody was being nice to him, Lisa. It was sponsored by Johnson's Wax, and it was Johnson's Wax that was in Racine, Wisconsin, and Jim and Marion Jordan, they were from Peoria, Illinois, and I had that mixed up a little bit. Initially, I had it right, but then I second-guessed myself, but our listeners, our very smart listeners, texted in and said, hey, listen, Omari, get it right.
You got a little mixed up, but we'll let it go this time.
Fibber, McGee, and Molly, great broadcast is heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Taphorn heaves it. Pardon the catch. Puts it up. Yes! Wildcat!
All right. This song came out the year you were born, right, Lisa?
Could be.
They played this at your birth.
Old.
At your birthday.
That's possible.
At your first birthday party.
I like it. I'm okay with that.
Hey, Roger.
Yo. Yowza. Yowza. Yowza.
What do you call an apology written in dots and dashes? What do you call an apology written in dots and dashes?
Dots and dashes is Morse code.
No. What's an apology written in dots?
Apology?
It's called remorse code.
Excuse me, I have to hit my head on a microphone.
Ow. Aleph liked that one. Here's another one.
No, Aleph liked Roger.
I liked Roger's reaction.
Roger's reaction was funnier than the joke.
What do you get when you cross a snowman and a vampire?
A snowman and a vampire.
Frostbite.
Can we play the music again?
I just thought Roger could use a laugh.
I've been laughing all night long.
I got rid of the music, sorry.
Hour two. This is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa and Elif and Roger. By the way, Roger, thanks for the news.
You're very welcome. I'm glad I could provide that service to you and our listeners.
You do such a job at the news.
You do a bang-up job.
You do such a job.
You should see the accident over here, speaking of bang-up job.
What? Uh-huh. Bad accident?
Yeah, in my office.
Apparently. Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, and you know what? Roger, this hour, Inner Sanctum Mysteries. I know you like Inner Sanctum.
You know I do. I love Fibber, McGee, and Molly. That's one of my favorite all-time comedies. Yeah, and now Inner Sanctum.
We have a scary one. It's called You Could Die Laughing. That's why I did the couple of jokes. You Could Die Laughing.
We choose these based on what Roger would like. So.
Yeah.
No,
it's all about you.
Come on, sure.
Yeah, no. That's what I do. I sit in my little office at my little desk and I think.
In her mansion.
In my little corner and I say, what would Roger most like to
hear? She pulls up in her convertible Bentley.
I could see her wearing the T-shirt, WWRL. What would Roger like?
No. Yeah. Or love, actually.
Love.
I'll go with the L, though.
Yeah,
and this is what I came up with.
She knows you like the scary stuff.
Yeah.
Because you're very scary.
I just want you to be happy, Roger.
I'm always happy.
I know. I want you to be happier.
Happier?
Er.
All right.
Speaking of monster.
Well, this hour, like all of our hours, is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars as Charity Barnum in Greatest Showman, the story of P.T. Barnum, founder of the famous Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Right. Okay.
And, of course, the winner gets...
P.T. Barnum. He said, a sucker was born... There's a sucker born every day, right? Or something like that?
Didn't he say something like that?
Every minute.
Every minute. Yeah, that's it. It's every minute.
Okay.
But Carl's going to go with day, which is fine. it slows things down a little bit.
Well, it condenses things.
Yeah.
You know.
And this is the actresses playing the role of Charity Barnum.
Okay.
And they will win a $25 gift certificate for...
Lou Malnati's Pizza. All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. This actress was the star of 2011's My Week with Marilyn.
I wasn't going to leave without saying goodbye. Don't forget me.
Ah, great actress. You know who that is? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
All right, we are back with a bang. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I wasn't going to leave without saying goodbye. Don't forget me.
We have Mike on the line from Crete. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Glad to talk to you.
Great show.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. So who is that great actress?
Michelle Williams.
Michelle Williams is exactly right. Do you like pizza?
Right.
Carl?
I sure do. Yes, yes.
Good. Me too. You can get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25 we'd like to give to you. It's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and order online at loumalnatis.com. Thank you so much for calling in. We hope you listen to the rest of the show.
Thank you, too.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you. Thanks for staying up late with us, as well as the rest of our listeners. They stay up late because we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning.
You know, if we have to stay up this late, they really should stay up with us.
Did you get a nap in today at all?
I did not.
No, me neither. I didn't get a nap in. I can tell you didn't. No. Why, am I crabby tonight?
And I didn't say that. I just said I could tell.
I'm a little crabby. Yes, I'm getting older, you know. I get crabbier.
You get a little cranky at nighttime. Of course, that's the only time I see you.
Know,
that's
I'm
a problem.
Sorry. I don't mean to be crabby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes, you know, you got to be a little crabby sometimes.
Do you?
I'm tired.
You know, be crabby to the other people. Then when you come here.
I'm not crabby to you.
Oh.
No.
That's what I meant.
I love you, Lisa.
No, I know.
I love Elif.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You should see if I don't like you.
Oh, I've seen it.
Nah. You know, nothing makes me happier than playing these classic radio shows. You know that?
I just love playing
these shows for our listeners.
This is a labor of love for all of us.
And a lot goes in. You know, when we play one of these radio shows, a lot goes into it. I mean, we do a transfer of the original 16-inch transcription disc. Then Mike digitally remasters that program. Make sure the sound quality's right and all the clicks and pops are out of it as best it can be. We take a lot of pride into delivering great quality classic radio here on the WGN Radio Theater. And we deliver a great quality classic radio show every Monday when you subscribe to freeradioclassics.com. If you don't know about this, we have a website. You can go to it. Just subscribe. It's absolutely free. Put your name and your email address. And you will get sent a classic radio show every Monday right to your email, along with a picture of who's in that show and all the information about it. Just go to freeradioclassics.com. You'll get 52 classic radio shows every year.
And that's today. We're going to get a radio show this afternoon. So if you sign up now, you will get today's show, right, Carl?
Yes, freeradioclassics.com, freeradioclassics.com. All right, it's time for Inner Sanctum Mysteries. This came to radio in 1941. It was created by Hyman Brown. Originally, the host was Raymond Edward Johnson. Then Paul McGrath took over a little later in the run. It had that creaking door trademark, you know? The door would squeak like crazy. And then it had a lot of guest stars, some big stars like Boris Karloff and Peter Lorre. But mostly it used New York pros like Mason Adams and Mercedes McCambridge and Santos Ortega, people like that. It was sponsored for most of its run by Lipton Tea, and it was one of the best mystery shows on radio. Let's go back to May 7th, 1946, for You Could Die Laughing. Here's part one of Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soups present Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Ah,
Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you once again to the Inner Sanctum. Do come in and join our circle, but watch out you don't get double-crossed. you're disturbed by those bodies dangling from the ceiling. Well, you know some people, they just die to come here. Then they hang around week after week and never say a word.
Well, I have a theory about that, Mr. Host.
What's that, Mary?
Maybe the reason they're hanging around is because they think we're going to serve refreshments later on.
Sure, that could be, all right.
You know, lots of folks are like that. And who can blame them? When there's good food ahead, they just won't leave. And that's especially true if there's a chance that Lipton tea is on the menu. Now, the reason for that is simply this. Lipton tea is tea at its delicious best, because Lipton's has such grand brisk flavor. In fact, brisk is the very word the tea experts themselves use to describe Lipton's full, hearty taste. You'll agree, I'm sure, the very first time you try it, for Lipton's is so lively and full-bodied and satisfying. Yes, it's that brisk flavor that makes more people buy and enjoy Lipton's than any other brand of tea in the world. So whenever you ask for tea, make sure you ask for Lipton tea.
And now, friends, draw close your chairs. If there are no faint hearts among us, we'll begin tonight's tale of terror. A story written especially for Inner Sanctum by Michael Sklar. Our star tonight is Santa Sotega, who plays the role of Elwood Fitch in You Could Die Laughing.
We wanted to escape our problem, to forget about it, so we went to the movies. There was a doctor in the story, and every time he appeared on the screen, I remembered. Halfway through the picture, I couldn't sit there anymore. I nudged Catherine, and we got up and walked out. The street was cold, dark, and empty.
Elwood, what do you want to do now?
I just want to go back home.
All right, dear.
Get in the car.
Elwood, I want to talk to you.
All right, there's time for that.
Please, dear, let's stop being silly about this thing. Let's face it.
I am facing it.
But you're not.
Don't argue with me.
For heaven's sake, don't you understand? The doctor said you only got a year to live unless we move to Arizona.
Doctors are human. They can make mistakes.
Not three doctors.
I don't care.
Why are you so stubborn? Why are you so dead set against Arizona?
You ought to know why, Catherine.
Me?
Yes, you.
Because of me?
Yes. I haven't given you much, Catherine, not even children. But I've been able to make a living. We've been able to get along. What would I do in Arizona without a job and without money?
Elwood, slow down.
I can still drive a car, Catherine.
You're speeding.
Let me alone.
Passing through a red light. Elwood, that man crossing the street. Look out, you...
Catherine, did I?
Yes, he's lying on the ground.
Good Lord, he walked in front of the car.
We've got to help him. Is he?
He's dead.
Oh, hell!
I didn't mean to do it. I couldn't help it. It happened so fast.
Better call the police.
Police?
Well, you said he's dead.
The police. Catherine, there's no one but us on the street. Nobody else saw it happen.
Well, what difference does that make?
Get back in the car.
Elwood, are you suggesting
I was
that...
speeding. I passed a red light. And now this. They'll arrest me. They'll put me on trial for manslaughter.
But my...
He's dead, isn't he? We can't help him. Won't do him any good if I go to jail.
But running away, leaving the body...
Catherine, we've got enough troubles without this. We're going to get into the car and drive straight to the garage. I've got a year to live, and I'm not going to spend it in prison.
Good evening, Mr. Fitch. Want me to put the car away for you?
Yes.
Show must have let out early, huh?
We didn't stay to the end, Ann. I didn't care for the picture.
Ah, them pictures. I always tell my wife. Say, what did you hit?
Hit?
Yeah, your front bumper. Blood on it.
Oh, that blood. A dog ran in front of the car. Do me a favor, Dan. Wash it off before you put the car away.
Sure thing, Mr. Fetch.
I didn't sleep well that night. Bad dreams, all mixed up. About doctors. They all looked like the man lying on the street. And their faces were covered with blood. I woke up, exhausted.
Breakfast is on the table, Elwood.
Just a moment.
That newspaper can wait. Your toast is getting cold.
Oh, here it is.
What are you looking for?
The story.
You mean last night? It's in the newspaper?
Listen to this. Stenger, victim of hit-and-run driver. Body of Augie Stenger, underworld character, was discovered early this morning at the intersection of Broad and Main Streets. Police believe Stenger was the victim of a hit-and-run driver.
The front door.
Yes.
Do you think it's the police?
I don't know. Get a grip on yourself. I'll see who it is.
Morning. You, Mr. Fitch?
Yes. What can I do for you?
I don't like to talk business on the front doorstep.
Business?
It's about last night, that accident.
What accident?
Don't try to act innocent. I saw that hit and run. Now can I come back?
Let me handle this, Andrew. Who are you?
My name is Chandler. I was sitting in my car last night at Broad and Main Street. I saw the accident and I followed you home. Thought I ought to talk to you about it this morning.
What do you want?
The cops are looking for that hit-and-run driver. I'm the only guy that knows you're him. It ought to be worth something for me to keep my mouth shut.
You want money?
Yeah.
Blackmail.
Don't talk to him, Edward. Send him away.
No, we can't do that, Catherine. He'd go to the police.
But Edward...
Leave this to me. All right, Chandler. I'll give you the money.
How much?
$500.
That's chicken feed.
$1,000.
Yeah, now you're talking sense. When do I get it?
I'll give it to you now. It's in my coat pocket. Here it is. You'll find exactly $1,000 in $20 bills.
Thanks.
Now, get out of here.
Now, wait a minute. Don't get nasty, Fitch. I'm doing you a favor.
You got your money. Now get out.
I'm going. But I'll be back. We call this the first installment.
Elwood, where did you get that money you gave him?
Money?
Last night you said we couldn't go to Arizona because we had no money. Yet you just gave that man $1,000. Where'd you get it?
I was ashamed to tell you. I took it from Stenger.
Stenger?
The man we hit. I put my hand inside his coat to see if his heart was beating. The money was in the inside pocket.
Elwood, how could you?
Don't look at me like that, Catherine. We've been married a long time. Long enough for you to know that I'm not a crook or a murderer.
But to kill a man and then take his money.
Try to understand. All day long I've been thinking. A year to live. A year to live. When you know you're going to die, it does something to you. You forget what's right and what's wrong. I thought, with that $1,000 and the few hundred we've got in the bank, I thought we might be able to go to Arizona after all.
Well, the money is gone.
Yes.
Don't think about it anymore.
How can I stop thinking? You heard what Chandler said. That $1,000 is the first installment. He'll blackmail us out of everything we own.
Jen.
Shut the door, quick.
Who is it, Catherine?
Shut that door, Mrs. Fitch.
You were here only yesterday. What do you want now?
The cops after me. You and me are in the same boat.
What have you done? What do they want you for?
Murder.
Murder? You shouldn't have come here.
I figure this place ought to make a pretty good hideout.
No. You can't stay here.
Who's going to stop me?
I won't allow it, Elwood. I won't have this man in my house.
All right, cut the squawk.
No. I stood a lot in you, Chandler, but stay away from me.
Don't you dare touch him. Elwood! Elwood!
Don't cry, Kathy. I'm all right.
Any more back talk, Fitch?
No.
Okay. I'm moving in.
He took over the house. He used Catherine and me as servants, treated us like dirt. There was nothing we could do about it. Just the three of us, cooped up in that little house. Couldn't go out. Food and cigarettes were sent up from the store. We'd gone like that until Tuesday morning.
Hush, Elwood. Chandler will hear you.
He can't. He's in the bedroom.
You're going to give yourself up?
I can't stand this anymore. I can't stand it.
Well, do what you think is best, darling.
I've made up my mind. Rather than put up with that man, I'd prefer to go to prison. I'll call the police right now. Hello, operator. Get me police headquarters.
Shut up, pal. At headquarters, Fitch.
Wait, Chandler. Don't point that gun at me.
Cancel that call.
Oh, all right. Hello, operator. Never mind that call to police headquarters. No, nothing's wrong. Yeah. I just made a mistake. Thank you.
You made your last mistake, Fitch.
Ooh, that's scary stuff, Lisa. Let's take a break on Inner Sanctum Mysteries. More after these words. Thank you, Esmeralda, and thank you, Roger. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Every Saturday and Sunday night, we're here from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. We play 6 classic radio shows every weekend, and we also try to entertain you a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to mention that I posted a couple pictures on our Facebook that might be fun to look at. One of them is our own producer, Aleph. She is a very accomplished artist, and I posted one of her works up there. She's holding it, and she did it herself.
Yeah,
you should look at it.
All by myself.
Yeah. All by yourself. Yeah. And I posted, one of our listeners sent in an empty can of Johnson's wax from around 1946 with Fibber McGee and Molly pictured on the can. Mm-hmm. And I put that on our Facebook page. It's really, really neat. So check it out. Go to Facebook and see what we've got going there.
Plus, there's pictures of the people that are in these classic radio shows up there as well. So check that all out. And we also have a website, WGNRadioTheater.com. Our schedule is there. All of the classic radio shows that we're airing every Saturday and Sunday night are posted right there. So go to WGNRadioTheater.com. But right now, it's the conclusion to You Could Die Laughing on Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Imagine that black villain, Jack Chandler. First he blackmails Elwood, then he blackjacks him, and now he blackballs him from using his own telephone. You know what I'd do if I were Elwood? I'd apply for a writ of habeas corpus. That is, if Chandler doesn't turn Elwood into a corpus first.
Things do look bad for Elwood, I must admit, Mr. Host. My, what a lot of unpleasant surprises he's been having.
Yes, and he's in for a lot more, Mary.
Goodness.
Now, friends, let's get back to those lovely people, Jack Chandler and Elwood Fitch. Chandler the murderer and Elwood the hit-and-run driver. It's quite a pair. Together, they make a full house. A moment ago, Elwood tried to give himself up to the police, but Chandler caught him at the telephone.
So, you were going to double-cross me, eh?
No. I was only going to tell the police about myself.
What do you suppose would happen to me when the cops came for you? I ought to kill you right now.
Oh, no.
You shut up. First thing I'm going to do is pull out that phone so you don't make no more calls at headquarters. Yeah. That settled the phone. Now stand up.
What are you going to...
The door.
Can you see who it is through the window, Fitch?
Yes.
Take a look. But remember, I still got this gun. Don't try any tricks.
It's a man.
Recognize him?
No.
Now listen. Before you open the door, I'm taking your wife into the next room with me. I'll be able to watch you and hear every word you say. You know what I'll do to Mrs. Fitch if you double-cross me.
Yes.
Okay. Now answer the door.
Mr. Fitch? Elwood Fitch?
That's right.
May I come in?
Yes, of course.
I'm Detective Farley from headquarters. Here's my badge. Mind if I ask a few questions?
What about?
Well, I've been assigned to the Stinger case. Familiar with it?
I read about it in the newspaper. A hit-and-run driver.
That's the case. What do you know about it, Fitch?
Why, nothing.
Are you sure?
See here, you don't
you
think...
and your wife went to the movies Friday night, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Did you drive straight to your garage from the movies?
Why, no. It wasn't a good movie, so we left early and went for a ride.
Did you pass the corner of Broad and Main Streets?
No. We went in the other direction.
You're lying, Fitch. I've been checking garages for that hit-and-run car. Your garage man told me you brought your car in Friday night with blood on the bumper.
I told him we ran into a dog.
Don't make me laugh. Your story wouldn't hold up a minute if that fool garage man hadn't washed the blood off.
Are you going to arrest me?
I need evidence first. When I get it, I'll come back.
Blood on the bumper. That cop is wise to you, Fitch.
He said he'd be back.
Sure. He'll be snooping around looking for proof. This is one heck of a hideout. I'm leaving.
You're going away?
Glad of that, ain't you? Well, you got nothing to celebrate.
What do you mean?
I need time, plenty of time to get away from the city. I'm not going to leave you here to squeal to the cops as soon as I'm out of the door.
We wouldn't tell the police.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure you don't. I got one murder rap on me already. It might as well be three.
Three?
Elwood, he means...
Listen, Chandler... I swear we won't tell. Why should we? Remember what you said. We're both in the same boat. The police are after me, too.
You tried to double-cross me once before. I ain't taking any chances.
Please, please.
There's no use begging. It won't do no good.
When are you going to do it?
Before I go. Sometime after dark.
The rest of that day was a nightmare. Chandler wouldn't let me separate from Catherine. Everywhere we went, everything we did, he was always behind us with that gun in his hand. A gun. I had to take it away from him. He was much younger than I, big and tough, but I had to try. I watched for my chance. It came late in the afternoon. He was lighting a cigarette. He put the gun down on the living room table while he felt in his pockets for a match. Both of us were the same distance from the gun. I made a dive for it.
Hey, get away from that rod.
No, let go.
I'll kill you for this.
Catherine, you help me. Grab his hand.
Let go of me. Let go.
Hold him, Catherine. Hang on, Tom.
Help.
He's dead.
I had to shoot him. I had to.
Now what will we do?
I don't know. What would he do if the positions were reversed?
Call the police.
No. The money. The money I gave him. $1,000 I took from Stenger. He still got it. It's ours again, Catherine. We're going to Arizona.
Arizona?
Don't you see? It's just like it was before he came. We'll take the money and we'll go to Arizona.
But... his body.
He's a murderer. He said so himself. We'll put the body into the car, drive out to the suburbs, and leave it on the highway. The police will think it was just another gangster murder. A I was just able to squeeze the dead body into the luggage compartment.
Hurry, Elwood. Let's get away before one of the neighbors sees us.
Oh, my gosh.
Now what's the matter?
The gasoline gauge. It's almost empty. Oh. We'll have to stop at the garage. I drove back to the garage. Had Dan fill the tank. And paid him with one of the $20 bills I'd taken from the body of Stinger. Dan gave me a queer look as he brought me the change.
Here you are, Mr. Fitch. 13 gallons out of a $20 bill.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh, by the way, did a detective come around to your house the other day?
Yes, he did.
I hope you don't hold it against me telling him about that blood on the bumper of your car.
Oh, of course not, Dan. Why should I? After all, I had nothing to hide.
No, that's right. Well, you know, to tell you the truth, Mr. Fitch, I was a little suspicious of you. I thought you really might be that hit-and-run driver. Not that it matters much now.
No?
No, no. The police don't care much now about that driver.
Why not?
Oh, he's small potatoes now. I just heard over the radio that that guy Stanger was just about dead even before that hit-and-run driver hit him.
How could that be?
Well, the way the radio explained it, Stanger was shot in the back, and he staggered out into the street, and then a car hit him.
But you said he wasn't killed by the car.
Yeah, that's right. The coroner's inquest showed that he died of a bullet wound. He'd been murdered. The police even know who killed him.
They know the killer's name?
Uh-huh. I heard it over the radio just a minute ago. Oh, yeah, Chandler. Jack Chandler.
I don't remember driving away from the garage. Kept going around in my brain. Chandler had murdered Stenger. Catherine and I had run away from a crime we hadn't committed. No wonder Chandler had seen the accident. No wonder he feared the police. And now he was dead. His body packed into the luggage compartment of the car.
Elwood, you're not listening to me.
What? Oh, I was thinking about Chandler.
That's what I was talking about. If he killed Stenger, why can't we go to the police and confess everything?
Because we killed Chandler.
But it was self-defense.
Would the police believe that?
They'd have to believe it.
Even if they did, it would be murder in the third degree. They'd learn about $1,000. I'd be held for trial. We'd never get to Arizona. No, Catherine. We've got to go through with our original plan.
Elwood, that siren.
It's a police car behind us.
What are you going to do?
They may not be after us. If they do stop us, let me do the talking.
Hey, forward! Stop that car!
Don't be afraid, Catherine. I'll handle it.
Uh-huh. Middle-aged man and woman. You answer the description, all right. Name Fitch?
Yes. What's the trouble, officer?
There's an alert out for you. You bought gas back at your garage a few minutes ago. Paid for it with a $20 bill.
That's right.
Got any more of those bills on you?
Why, yes.
Hand them over.
Here they are.
Looks like it's all here. This is the stuff, all right.
What stuff? What are you talking about?
It's money. It's counterfeit. Just like the bill you gave the garage man.
Counterfeit?
Phony money down to the last dollar. Move over. We're driving to headquarters.
Well, that's the story, Detective Farley. You'll find Chandler's body in the back of my car.
Willing to put your signature to this confession, Mr. Fitch?
Yes, I'll sign it.
Oh, you could have saved yourself a lot of grief. I knew you were the hit-and-run driver when I came around to your house. But I needed the proof, and you gave it to me when you broke one of these phony $20 bills.
Did you know then about the money?
Sure. Stinger had a long record as a counterfeiter. His girl told us he was carrying $1,000 in bad money the night he was killed. Naturally, when we didn't find the money on his body, we knew it had been taken by the hit-and-run driver. And the blood on the bumper of your car was the giveaway.
Well, now that you've caught me, what's going to happen to me?
Well, depends on the jury. You might get 20 years. Might get life imprisonment. You might even get acquitted.
I'm in the courtroom now. Catherine beside me, waiting for the decision. The jury just filed in. The judge has asked if they reached a verdict. The foreman of the jury is rising to his feet.
Your Honor, we find the defendants not guilty.
Catherine.
Oh, Elwood, thank heaven.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry. Oh, darling, you were right from the very beginning. Money or no money, we're going to Arizona.
Well, fooled you that time, friend. Slipped you a happy ending when you weren't set for it. But that jury decision, I don't know, it sounded a bit fishy. But seriously, friends, do you like happy endings? I don't, but then some people do. You know, someday, just to make sure, I'm going to have some research organization take a gallows poll. A parting word of advice, friends, drawn from the experiences of Elwood Fitch. If your wife wants you to take a trip, don't argue. No, don't pretend. Simply bash her on the head and deliver her to the police. You can always say she tripped. Oh, yes. This month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is I Hate Blondes by Wolf Kaufman. And next week, the makers of Lipton Tea and Lipton Soups we'll bring you another Inner Sanctum story directed by Hyman Brown and called Screams in the Night. Of course, there'll be lots of screams. The kind you like, blood-curdling. And there's the usual triangle. A man, his wife, and another girl. But the joker is, he who grafts best gasps last. Don't get it? And for the details, better be listening to Inner Sanctum next week. Until then, good night. Pleasant dream.
Let's begin at the beginning of the meal, friends, with the soup. If you want soup to be both delicious and easy to prepare, make it Lipton's Noodle Soup. Here's a soup that has real honest-to-goodness chickeny flavor. It's full of tender noodles, and because it comes in modern soup mix form, it saves both time and money. Lipton's Noodle Soup mix is quick to make, and it makes lots more than canned soups, yet costs less. Try Lipton's Noodle Soup. And tune in next week for another Inner Sanctum mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Want to hear something really ironic, Lisa?
Isn't it ironic?
No, seriously, though. I'm not even joking. Okay. I bought Lipton noodle soup today.
Right.
At the grocery store.
I buy it all the time in the package.
I buy it in the package.
We do, you know? Too. My daughter
and you
likes
just
that.
Boil the water and yep. You pour it in there.
I know.
It's good.
We bought the extra noodle one. Which one did
That's
you get?
That's the one I
extra
bought.
Extra noodle.
Yeah.
Lipton. Yep.
That's exactly what I bought. It's in a red box.
Yeah. We call it the Clifford soup because it used to have a picture of Clifford on the.
It did?
Yeah.
So there's a sponsor still going strong right there.
Very much so.
Sponsor of Inner Sanctum Mysteries. That's a broadcast from May 7th, 1946. You could die laughing. Paul McGrath was the host there in the cast, Santos Ortega and Jackson Beck. I got to meet Jackson Beck one time. I told you I interviewed him and at one of these conventions, mm-hmm. and he was very crabby. He wasn't real happy
well,
about
doing
it.
Now you know how it feels.
He gave me the interview, but he wasn't really too happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I caught him on a bad day or
must
something
be
like
it,
that.
Yeah.
But that was heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. It is 6 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning. It's Monday morning, and we're here till 2 o'clock. So we've got another, I'm going to do the math here, Lisa. 55 minutes.
It's 54, but you were so close.
No, it's 50. Well, yeah, you're right. 54. Darn. Gosh.
So close.
And math was one of my better subjects,
too.
Oh,
I'm sure.
You know what I was really bad at? Algebra.
Mm.
Oh, I was brutal at algebra. I think I got like a C, something like that in algebra.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good for you.
No, I mean.
For you. Yeah. For
no,
you.
I'm just saying. I mean, for it was tough. Algebra was tough for me.
Math is difficult.
How was that
She's
for you?
She's trying to make a point.
Why? Yeah.
For you.
I'm not going to let her. I'm not going to let her. It's not funny.
Oh.
How was algebra for you?
No problem.
No problem? Well, Lisa was a professional student, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You were in school.
You know what, Carl? I'm still a student. We are all students of life, Carl.
Yeah, but Lisa went to school a long time.
Went to school. Yeah, I love school.
She went to school for what? How many years?
Well, I started in kindergarten.
Right. So you were five.
I had four years of college.
Right.
And then I had 5 years of graduate school.
Okay. 4 years of college and then 5 more years. That's 9 years. You could have been a doctor.
I pretty much am. Yeah. You can just call
You're
me Doc.
You're the doctor of radio.
Just call me Doc.
I've always said you could do a radio like talk show for psychiatry.
Well, like Dr. Ruth? Mm-hmm. Like a Dr. Ruth Westheimer?
Well, Dr. Ruth was a different kind of psychiatrist.
Oh, you mean...
I'm talking about like just regular, you know, call Lisa, get advice. Lisa could have an advice show.
Yeah, I
right?
love that.
You'd give good
advice.
That
would be great.
Right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we should get Lisa her own show. We'll start on a college radio station with
college?
You. That's how I started.
Get
I started
out of town.
On a You know, I started on a college radio station. WRRG, Triton College Radio, same place that Wendy Snyder started.
Right,
we both
I
went
know.
To college there, her yeah. and I. And I, of course, was studying to be an astronaut at the time because I took up space.
If but, Roger were here, he'd be hitting his head.
But I think that Wendy was a communications major, I'm
yep.
pretty sure. But I think that you should start on a college station as a advice host. And then, you know,
well, what's
eventually...
wrong with WGN?
What? Well, you have a show on WGN. It's classic radio. We play classic radio here.
Right. I
can't do a different kind of thing.
All right. Well, I'll take it under advisement.
What do you think? We should ask our listeners. Text us. Let us know what you think. You think Lisa should have an advice show here? 312-981.
Oh, yeah. I totally can see her.
I can see her. Seriously, I'm not even kidding. I think she could do it.
Because Elif always calls me mom. That's because every time I say something, she goes, my mom would say the same thing.
She has had a lot of life experiences, right?
Mm-hmm. And moms are always right. She's a mom.
It's true.
With age comes wisdom, and you are really smart. You are really, really smart.
Oh, I've got it.
There's a correlation there between the two.
I feel very
312-981-7200. All right, this hour we have Dangerous Assignment brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the superhero film Logan, the 10th installment in the X-Men film series.
Mm.
And the winner will get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
All right, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of 2012's musical drama Les Miserables.
And must my name until I die be no more than an alibi? Must I lie? How can I ever face my fellow men? How can I ever face myself again?
Mm-hmm.
Talented guy.
All right, who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that movie clip one more time.
And must my name until I die be no more than an alibi? Must I lie? How can I ever face my fellow men? How can I ever face myself again?
Boy, Lisa loves those musicals.
She's got goosebumps.
I can see her goosebumps from
the
here.
Way I see you get cranky. I get kind of excited by this. Hi, Kathy. We've got Kathy on the line from New Lenox. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Tired. I've just gotten off work, but I'm doing okay.
Yeah, I know how you feel.
I've been hearing you too.
Did you see this?
Like I'm listening. It sounds like I'm listening to Tired and Tireder.
Well, I'm going to go with
neither one of us had a nap. That's why.
Yeah, but I do better without the nap
than
he does.
So yeah.
So who is that actor?
My best guess would be Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman is right. Did you see Les Mis, the movie and or the play?
No, I don't get to a lot of movies, but I have friends who do.
Excellent. Well, we're thrilled to give you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set hosted by Mr. Stacy Keach, produced and directed by Carl Amari. So we hope that you will love it. I can tell you firsthand, it's really good stuff.
Anything with Carl Amari, I know is good stuff.
Absolutely.
You know,
enjoy.
A little calamari fried or you know, grilled is pretty good, Kathy. A little calamari.
You're buying?
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Appreciate you.
Thank you. All right. Good morning.
Enjoy those CDs. Okay, Lisa, you ready for Dangerous Assignment? This was a spy drama. Brian Donlevy starred as U.S. Secret Agent Steve Mitchell. He was sent to exotic locales to troubleshoot for the USA. It came to radio in 1949. Herb Butterfield played the commissioner who briefed Mitchell on his dangerous assignments, and it transitioned to television in 1950s with 39 episodes. So it was a TV show and a radio show. We have a radio episode now from February 10th, 1951. It's called Eastern Europe, Krona Cutlass. Here is Brian Donlevy in Dangerous Assignment.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble, but when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's going to involve my trying to hold an Eastern European country together with my finger ring. Morning, Commissioner. Ruth said you had an assignment for me.
I do, Steve.
Well, where do I go this time?
To jail.
Let's have that again.
You heard me. I'm sending you to jail.
Now, look, so maybe I did pad my expense account a little last month, but that isn't enough reason.
Seriously, Steve, there's someone in jail I want you to talk to, a woman.
Oh, well, you're sounding better by the moment.
I'm afraid you don't get the point.
Okay, what is the point?
The point is on the end of the Krona Cutlass, and it's a sharp one.
Look, jail, sword points, I think you better start at the beginning, Commissioner.
Take a look at this map, Steve. See this little country in Eastern Europe?
What about it?
Politically, it's on the fence right now. And as you know, that country has had a history of violence stretching back hundreds of years.
Wait a minute. The Krona Cutlass, isn't that regarded as a sort of symbol of unity in that country?
Whoever has had it in his possession has always been able to rally the country behind him, yes. The Krona Cutlass has been a symbol of unity, or rather was.
What do you mean, was?
Just before the end of the war, the Krona Cutlass was given to a U.S. Army lieutenant for safekeeping by one of their national leaders. Shortly after that, the lieutenant was reported missing in action. And neither he nor the sword has ever been located.
I still don't see what all of this has to do with my talking to a lady in jail, Commissioner.
That lady is the missing Army lieutenant's wife. This morning, the police got an anonymous tip that she had in her possession a jewel from the handle of the Krona Cutlass.
What?
That's right, Steve. They picked her up and brought her in. The jewel was in her purse.
You trying to tell me that the Army lieutenant's really alive and has been sending jewels from the sword back home one at a time for his wife to sell?
I'm only giving you what facts we have at this time, Steve. But I think there's a lot more to it than appears on the surface.
Oh, for instance, maybe this whole thing's a frame, huh?
I think it is. But thinking it and proving it are two different things. Naturally, that country is clamoring for the return of that sword.
Well, we've got to find it before we can return it.
Right. And I think you know there are interests in that country who would prefer that the sword not be returned, or if it is, that they're the ones who return it.
Yeah. That figures all right.
The most important newspaper over there is hooked up with these same interests, Steve. The story of this woman's arrest has already leaked out, and they're making capital of it. That's why we've got to act fast. Now, Steve, get down to the jail. Talk to the lieutenant's wife and get her story. Then go anywhere and do anything you have to find that sword and deliver it to the proper officials. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
The National Broadcasting Company is presenting Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy in the role of Steve Mitchell, colorful two-fisted government agent. At all those places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you'll find Steve Mitchell on another Dangerous Assignment.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Just a simple matter of trying to locate an old beat-up sword. But the difference is that this particular sword could determine the fate of an entire nation. And I know that somewhere along the line, I'm sure to tangle with an outfit who'll be trying their best to give me that sword. Right in the neck. So I mosey down to the jail and talk to the Army Lieutenant's wife, Mrs. Rogers.
I'm glad you came, Mr. Mitchell. Maybe you'll believe me. Nobody else around here seems to.
Well, suppose you start from the beginning, Mrs. Rogers.
All right. 5 years ago, my husband was reported missing in action. I was convinced that he'd been killed. I am.
Go on.
In the last letter I received from him, he mentioned something about having a valuable sword in his possession. The Kroner something or other.
Kroner cutlass.
Yes. He said that it had been entrusted to him so that it wouldn't be captured by the enemy. That was the only thing he said about it. And I never heard from my husband again.
Then how do you account for having one of the jewels from that sword in your possession?
This morning a man came to my door. He handed me a small box and said it was for my husband. Before I could recover from the shock, he'd gone. In that box was a jewel.
I see.
I didn't know what to do. Finally, I decided to go to the police. But on the way here, I was arrested. I guess they didn't believe I was coming here to give it to them. Later, they told me that that jewel had come from the handle of the sword.
Yeah.
You believe me, don't you?
I'd like to. Look, you say a man came to your door and handed you that jewel this morning. Had you ever seen him before?
No, never.
Can you describe him?
Well, he was short and dark. Well, that's about all I remember.
That's not much to go on. Can't you remember anything else about him?
I'm afraid not. Wait. His clothing.
What about it?
He was wearing a pea coat and dungarees.
Could have been a sailor. Well, that's still not very much to go on, but I guess I'll have to do with it. Thanks for the information, Mrs. Rogers. I'll see what I can find out. Well, at this point, I don't know whether Mrs. Rogers is telling you the truth or not, but there's only one way to find out, so I start checking. Then, 23 cab drivers later, I find one who remembers picking up a sailor from Mrs. Rogers' address and taking him to the waterfront just in time to catch a freighter that was pulling out, the Golden Star. I check further and find that the Golden Star is now en route to Liverpool, England, so I fly to England. And I'm waiting on the dock in Liverpool when the Golden Star pulls in.
Thank you, Max, sir.
Pity some people can't learn to stay at home and mind their own business.
What? Look, I... Oh, well, my old friend, Inspector Barrett.
Hello, Mitchell.
How's Scotland Yard these days?
Still doing business at the same address, thank you.
What are you doing here in Liverpool?
Oh, just dropped down to see what you were doing here. Last time you came over, as I remember, you were looking for microfilm.
Yeah, this time it's a sword.
My, my. You should have quite a collection of trophies when you finally round out your illustrious career. Anything I can do to give you a hand, old boy?
Thanks, but I doubt it. Unless you want to stand here and watch every seaman who comes off that freighter that's just docking. All I know is that the one I'm after is short and dark, which is going to make it pretty tough.
No, not really tough at all, Mitchell. Here.
What's this?
Just a photograph of the man you're after, old boy.
Huh? Hey, how did you get this?
Quite simple, really. Your commissioner told us you were coming and why. The Golden Star is a British freighter. So we sent a wireless to the skipper, asking for the name of the seaman who almost missed the ship in the States. He sent us the name, and we nosed around in the hiring hall files and got this picture. Chap named Perkins. Oh, really nothing to it.
Oh, well, I got a hunch it wasn't quite as simple as you're making it sound, but thanks anyway. Hey, look, coming down the gangplank.
Righto, Perkins himself. And he looks to be in a bit of a hurry. Want to nab him?
No, not yet. I'm more interested in seeing where he goes and whom he reports to. Let's tag along after him and find out. follow Perkins off the pier. He grabs a cab and starts taking side streets, obviously trying to shake off anyone who might be tailing him, but Barrett and I stick. Finally, Perkins' cab pulls up in front of the railroad depot, and he disappears inside. We jump out and follow him, but when we get inside, Perkins is nowhere in sight.
Well, quite a disappearing act the lad pulled on us, Mitchell.
He's got to be around here somewhere, Barrett.
Yes, but where?
He may try to get on that train that's pulling in.
He'd have to be pretty speedy to do that. That's a through train. Doesn't stop here.
Oh. Hey, look, that crowd over on the platform.
Yes, I got a glimpse of the blighter, too.
Come on.
Mitchell, he's trying to get through that crowd. Seems to be running from someone. Mitchell!
Brother!
Fell right into the path of the train.
Miller got pushed.
One side, please. One side. Let us through, please. One side. One side. Stand back.
Hey, not a very pretty sight, is he?
No. Looks like we're a bit too late. Well, come along. I say, Mitchell.
Okay.
Praying over the blighter is all very well, but...
I wasn't exactly praying, Barrett.
Well, I saw your lips moving and quite sure you weren't carrying on a conversation with him.
No, I wasn't. But someone from a distance might think I was.
I see. The chap who pushed Perkins, for instance.
For instance?
I say, aren't you sticking out the well-known neck? If the killer thinks you have any information, he's liable to take a try at you.
Well, that might give me a lead, and right now I'm fresh out.
Strikes me as a rather grim way of getting a lead. Well, where does all of this leave you now, Mitchell?
Right in the middle of nowhere.
Looks a little embarrassing for your government at this point, doesn't it?
It sure does. A United States Army lieutenant gets a symbolic sword entrusted to him and disappears. Then a jewel from the sword turns up in his wife's possession. Not exactly conducive to good relations between our country and theirs, particularly when the leading newspaper of their country is hooked up with the interests which would like to take over.
Yes, I imagine that paper is making quite an issue of the incident.
You know, Perkins' murder just now convinces me more than ever that this whole deal is a frame. Perkins was probably hired to deliver that jewel to Mrs. Ford.
Mm-hmm.
He outlived his usefulness and was killed to shut his mouth.
Nice theory, if you can prove it. Oh, incidentally, where is that jewel?
In my pocket.
What?
I'm going to turn it over to the Royal Museum. That's where the sword used to be kept. I guess that's my next stop. When can I catch a plane across the channel?
Weather's a bit thick for flying right now, Mitchell. Better take the channel boat.
Okay. Well, thanks for everything, Barrett.
Righto. Oh, it was really...
Yeah, I know. It was really nothing. Well, see you later, I hope. So I board the channel boat. It's dark and foggy, and as usual, the crossing is rough, and I stand out on deck at the rail, and pretty soon a sad-looking little gent is standing beside me.
Oh!
Little hard on stomach, huh?
Oh, 15 times I crossed this channel. 14 times I am seasick.
What happened the 15th time?
I fly across.
Oh, better that way, huh?
No, that time I got airsick.
He wanders down the deck and disappears into the mist. I stand there a few minutes more. Then suddenly I hear a little noise behind me and I start to turn. Then I hear someone running at me. I drop to one knee. A knife flashes down at me. I grab a wrist and heave. There he goes flying. I don't even get a look at the knife artist. My hunch is that it was C6 Sam, but at this point it doesn't matter, except that having missed me once, they'll probably try again. I get to Paris and take a plane east to the country that the sword belongs to, and I head for the Royal Museum and the curator's office.
Good morning. What can I do for you?
Well, hello. I was expecting to find someone with a long gray beard. This is quite an improvement.
Thank you, but I'm not the curator. Dr. Marzak is. I'm his assistant, Anna.
Anna? Steve Mitchell from the United States.
Oh, yes, Mr. Mitchell. We have been expecting you.
I'm supposed to turn over the jewel from the Kroner Cutlass to the curator.
I know. A very unfortunate incident, isn't it?
It sure is.
Mr. Mitchell, I'm convinced that this is a deliberate plot on the part of those interests which would like to create a rift between our two countries.
Well, it's good to hear someone else say that, Anna.
Dr. Marzak is quite anxious to talk to you, but he's busy right now. If you care to wander around the museum and look at the exhibits, I will call you when he's free.
All right, a good spy adventure program here on Dangerous Assignment from February 10th, 1951, starring Brian Donlevy. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first, these words.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. Thank you, Ella. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you,
thank
Carl.
Thank you, listeners. Thank
Don't
you.
Fall asleep, Carl.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
I have to get a nap in before I do the show. I tried. Mm-hmm. But see, I had Rachel today, and we did a Target run, and then we were watching TV together. And
well, that's what you do. That, it's family time.
My 14-year-old, you know? And of course, we went to Target, and then what we did was we each had our timers. We were like, all right, we're at Target. I'm going to go my way with my cart. You go your way with your cart. Yeah. And we timed it half an hour, and we're like, okay, meet you at the checkout in 30 minutes. And then,
really?
You know, yeah, that's what we do.
Oh.
She goes and does what she wants to go look at. She wants
maybe
to look
it's
at,
a girl thing.
She wants to look at girl stuff and makeup and all that. I don't want to look at that.
I go and do it with her. We do
it
together.
Yeah, but because you're a girl.
Is that right?
Last time I looked at you, you looked like a girl.
You could be.
You got long hair.
Oh, that'll do it. Yeah, it's the long hair.
Eyelashes.
That's a great joke. When I was...
Hang on. If it was a joke, then there. How's that?
When my sister and I used to go shopping with my dad, he would drop us off at the store and say, okay, you have half an hour to look around here, and I'm going to go to the cigar shop.
That's I don't like cigars, though.
Ugh. Yeah, no, that's
no. I can't
bad.
Smoke a cigar.
I can't smoke anything.
But I like Target. Target's a cool store.
Well, yeah, I did a lot of shopping with my daughter. I had two of them home this weekend, so we did a lot of Trader Joe's and whatnot.
Oh
fun.
Yeah,
we're busy.
I like Trader Joe's too.
Yeah, it was a lot
good
of
good stuff there.
Yeah, it's good.
You can spend a lot of money at Trader
Joe's.
Oh,
I know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I did a good job of that.
Bring both your credit cards.
Mm-hmm. Both of them.
One explodes when you go there. All right, it's time for the conclusion now to Dangerous Assignment.
So I nose around the museum. It's a typical collection, a few fig leaf characters, a bunch of spears and crossbows on the walls, and a plaster statue of a general on horseback holding a sword in the air.
One of our heroes, Mr. Mitchell.
Hmm? Oh, I couldn't hear you come up.
His name is General Krupper. He lived 2 centuries ago, and he was as devoted to our country as I am.
Oh, well, speaking of names, what's yours?
I am Gabor, the editor of the newspaper here.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of your paper, Gabor.
And let me assure you, I have heard of you, Mr. Steve Mitchell from the United States.
You seem to. So your newspaper is devoted to the welfare of this country, huh?
Completely.
Sure, sure.
And has your interventionist government sent you over here in a feeble attempt to explain away this defamation of our national symbol, the Kroner Cutlass?
You know, I'll bet you took those words right out of one of your editorials.
The fact remains that your noble army lieutenants feel so little respect for our country that they steal our symbol and sell the jewels from it.
Look, Gabor, according to our information, the army lieutenant to whom that sword was entrusted was killed in action several years ago.
Obviously, he's alive and in hiding. You could have easily falsified the records.
Oh, sure. Tell me, is there by any chance an election coming up in this country soon?
That has nothing to do with it.
Oh, of course not. I was just asking.
Do not attempt to cloud the issue. The very fact that you have in your possession a jewel taken from the Kroner Cutlass is proof of our suspicions.
Yeah. I must admit it does look sort of bad for us.
You pretend to be unconcerned, yet I see you wringing your hands with nervousness. But you have indeed a good cause to be nervous.
You're so right, Gabor.
Mr. Mitchell, Dr. Marzak will see you now.
Thanks, Anna. Well, see you around,
and
Gabor.
If you will, Mr. Mitchell, I intend to give your visit here the widest publicity.
I'm sure of it.
Right in here, Mr. Mitchell.
Ah, Mr. Mitchell.
Dr. Marzak?
I am happy to make your acquaintance. Although I wish these circumstances were more pleasant, sit down.
Thanks.
Dr. Marzak agrees with us, Mr. Mitchell, that this could be a plot.
That is what I would like to think, Anna. But we cannot close our eyes to facts.
I know. And here's fact number one. The jewel from the Kroner Cutlass.
Oh, wait.
What's the matter, huh?
Let me see that jewel. Mr. Mitchell, this is the jewel you brought with you from the United States.
It sure is. Why?
This is just a piece of cheap onyx.
What?
Oh, no.
It's true, Dr. Marzak. See for yourself. This jewel was not taken from the Kroner Cutlass.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure this stone didn't come from the Kroner cutlass?
Of course I'm sure.
Let me see it, Anna.
Oh, here you are, Dr. Marzak.
Why, Anna is right, Mr. Mitchell.
Hmm. Well, my theory is that this deal is a frame, but I hardly think the interest behind it would be stupid enough to give us a phony jewel. Wait a minute.
Where are you going?
I've got a little errand to do, Dr. Marzak. I'll check with you two later.
Mr. Mitchell.
Hello, Gabor. Good thing you're still hanging around.
What do you mean?
Go on into Dr. Marzak's office. I'll bet he's got an interesting story for you.
Thank you. I'm certain he has. As a matter of fact, I have that story all set up in print and ready to run.
Don't count on it. Gabor disappears into Marzak's office looking like a cat after a seven-course dinner. I get over behind the statue of the sword-holding general on horseback because if my hunch is right, if Gabor and his outfit are behind this deal, he's going to come out of Marzak's office in a hurry, looking like a sick chicken. And 2 minutes later, he does. I follow him outside to a phone booth where he puts in a quick call. Then he heads for a little bar. He downs three drinks in a hurry, looking more nervous by the moment. 10 minutes later, a fat gent comes in and waddles over to him. I slip the bartender a buck and learn that the fat guy's name is Kratz, the publisher of the paper that Gabor edits. I stroll over to them. Hello, Gabor.
Oh, Mitchell.
Yeah. So this is Steve Mitchell from the United States.
That's right, Mr. Kratz.
You know my name.
We all have our sources of information. You publish Gabor's newspaper, don't you?
Your information is quite accurate. And how is your mission coming, Mitchell? I imagine you're having great difficulty explaining this incident.
Oh? You mean Gabor hasn't told you yet?
Tell me what?
Well, as a matter of fact...
Tell me what?
That jewel didn't come from the Kroner cutlass.
A very feeble joke, Mitchell.
It's no joke. Ask Dr. Marzak or his assistant. They ought to know.
You see, I was going to tell you I hadn't the time yet.
You perhaps felt it was not important, Gabor.
This whole thing is a trick, Mr. Kratz. I'm sure of it.
You don't sound very sure to me, Gabor. You know, without mentioning any names, it could go together something like this. Someone hires a merchant seaman to deliver a jewel from the Kroner cutlass to a woman in the States, but the seaman pulls a double cross and switches jewels, keeping the real one. That make any sense to you, Gabor?
Of course not. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, there could be some heads rolling for a deal like that.
I tell you, this whole thing is a trick, Mr. Kratz.
If you'll excuse us, Mr. Mitchell, I believe Gabor and I should have a little talk.
But Mr. Kratz...
Sure, go right ahead. See you later, gentlemen.
Oh, Mr. Mitchell.
Hello, Anna.
Dr. Marzak began to think you were not coming back. He left a few minutes ago.
I'm sorry my errand took longer than I thought, but it was worth it. It's nice to have the pressure on somebody else for a change.
I'm not sure I understand you.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Would you like a ride home?
Oh, well, yes, thank you very much. I'll be with you as soon as I finish soaking my hands. Work around these old relics is not conducive to a good manicure.
Yeah, I can imagine. Here, your hands are all wet. I'll get the phone.
Oh, never mind.
No trouble. Hello? Hello? Hello?
What's the matter?
I don't know. Nobody answers.
I'll take it.
Here you are.
Hello? Hello? Oh, it was probably a wrong number.
Oh, I wonder.
What do you mean?
I think I know where that call came from, Anna. I could hear a balalaika playing in the background. It could have been from the bar I just came from. There was a balalaika there, too.
But who could be calling me from a bar?
That's a good question. Well, come on.
It's very thoughtful of you to take me home, Steve. Here, I'll turn out the lights.
Dark out here in the main hall.
Yes. Be careful not to bump into General Krupa's horse.
You think he might kick me?
If he did, it would be quite an event. Turn to the right here.
Okay. I guess you have every square foot of this place memorized, huh?
Just about. Oh.
What's the matter?
Oh, I left my gloves in the office. It'll only take me a minute. Wait here.
I stand there in the dark, waiting. Several minutes go by, and I'm just about to go back to the office to see what happened to Anna when I hear a faint creaking sound to one side of me. I hit the floor. Something plucks into the wall over my head. I get to my knees and start circling in the dark. But the room is empty except for a heavy crossbow lying on the floor.
Steve?
Over here, Anna.
Oh, wait, I'll turn on the lights. There. Are you all right?
As far as I know.
What happened?
Somebody took a pot shot at me with a crossbow.
What?
That surprise you?
Oh, yes, of course. What do you mean?
You know, it took you a long time to find those gloves, Anna.
What are you talking about?
Long enough for you to have come back here in the dark and gotten that crossbow down off the wall.
Steve, whatever put such a ridiculous idea into your head?
Let it go for the time being. Come on, let's go.
This is my apartment just ahead, Steve.
Okay.
Are you still suspicious of me, Steve?
I guess right now I'm a little suspicious of everything, Anna.
Perhaps if you were to come up and let me mix you a drink, Steve, you might find out that your suspicions were completely unjustified.
I might, at that. Okay, I...
Oh, what is it?
Nothing. Look, I don't think I'll be able to make it, Anna.
Oh, but
I just
Steve...
remembered something I have to take care of right away. I'll be seeing you. What's changed my mind is a glimpse of a figure standing across the street in the shadows. I get in my car and drive around the block and come back. The guy is gone. I look up at Anna's window and the lights are out. Suddenly, it hits me. I pound upstairs and down the hall to her door. There's a faint smell of gas. I start throwing my shoulder against the door. Windows are closed. The gas is on, full tilt, and Anna's lying on the bed. I turn off the gas and open the windows. Anna. Anna. Here. I'll get you over to the window. Don't try to talk until you get some fresh air in your lungs. There you are. That's better?
Oh, yes. Yes, much.
What happened?
Oh, someone knocked on my door. And when I opened it, whoever it was hit me. I didn't get a chance to see who. That is all I remember.
Well, at least this attempt on your life sort of takes you off my suspicious list.
But why would anyone want to kill me, Steve?
I don't know, unless... Hey, wait a minute. Put it together this way. Only three people outside the enemy's camp know that the jewel is a phony. You, Dr. Marzak, and myself.
So?
So, first an attempt is made on my life, that crossbow gag at the museum. Then an attempt is made on your life just now. Sort of looks like the opposition is trying to keep that jewel switch a secret, doesn't it?
Oh, Steve, that means...
That means they'll probably try next for the third name on the list, the guy who has that phony jewel right now.
Dr. Marzak.
Do you know his home phone number?
Oh, yes. I'll call him right away.
Tell him to lock himself up in a hurry. These babies we're up against believe in moving fast.
I know, they... Hello? Let me speak to Dr. Marzak, please. What? How long ago? Do you know where he went? Oh, I see. An appointment. Oh, thank you.
Where is he?
Well, according to the butler, Dr. Marzak had a 10 o'clock appointment at the museum.
Who with?
Someone who telephoned him earlier in the evening. The butler doesn't know who.
Someone who phoned him? Yeah. Could be the same guy who called the museum when I answered the phone, and in my book, that adds up to Gabor.
Steve, Gabor will try to kill Dr. Marzak.
That looks that way. What time is it?
10 minutes to 10.
That gives us just 10 minutes to get there. Come on, let's go. You got a key to the front door of this joint, Anna?
Yes, right here.
Good. Haven't got any time to waste. Hey, who's that gent roosting in front of the door?
I don't know. I've never seen him before.
What do you want?
Get out of the way. We want to see Dr. Marzak.
The curator does not wish to be disturbed.
Oh, who told you that? Dr. Marzak or Gabor?
Get away from here before I...
Go!
Sorry, Buster. Come on, Anna. Get this door open.
Yes. They are probably in Dr. Marzak's office. I hope we're in time to prevent Gabor from killing him.
So do I. Where's that turn in the hall?
It's right here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look. There's a crack of light under Marzak's office door.
There was a crack of light, you mean? The lights just went off.
Oh, shall I turn them on out here?
No, I don't want us to be silhouetted when I open that office door. Well, there we are. Now, get down.
All right.
Here goes. My ear, and then I hear a back door slam. I open it. It's a flight of stairs. I start up. Then I see a figure coming down at me. I drop to one knee and throw a shoulder into it. It goes flying. gets to the bottom and lies still, there's enough light to tell me that the stairs I'm on lead to a balcony which overlooks the main hall of the museum. I start up them again. Then a voice from above stops me.
Who is it?
Steve Mitchell. Where are you, Dr. Marzak?
Above you, on the balcony.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm quite all right. Thank you.
One slug hits me in the shoulder and bounces me back against the wall. Now, at last, I know who the real leader of the opposition is, Dr. Marzak. I flatten myself against the wall and inch up the rest of the stairs. He's shooting blind, and if I've counted correctly, his gun is empty by now. I reach the balcony, then I see a glint of metal. He's coming at me with a battle axe. I duck just in time. Yeah, axe cuts the air an inch above my head, and I let him have a left. Brother.
Steve! Steve, are you okay?
Yeah. He just winged me. You can turn the lights on now.
All right. Oh, Steve, look.
Yeah. That statue of General Krupa. Marzak must have fallen right on top of the sword in the general's hand.
Oh.
His weight broke the sword off and he fell to the floor. Not a very pretty sight, is it?
Oh, no. Steve, wait.
What's the matter?
That sword. That is the Kroner Cutlass.
What?
Yes. There's a coat of plaster over it, but some of it cracked away. It is the Kroner Cutlass.
Well, how about that? Marzak must have had it hidden right here all the time in the general's hand. Well, I gotta hand it to him. He couldn't have picked a better hiding place.
But why, Steve?
Oh, it's pretty simple. Marzak and his outfit probably figured that after thoroughly discrediting my country with that stolen jewel gag, they'd produce the sword along about election time and win enough votes with it.
But I don't understand why Marzak was stupid enough to use an imitation jewel.
He wasn't.
What do you mean?
Here's the real jewel from the Kroner Cutlass, Anna.
Oh.
I've had it right here in my pocket all along.
But that jewel you showed us.
That one I pried out of my finger ring. You see, when I was talking to Gabor outside Marzak's office, I realized he was counting pretty heavily on the fact that the jewel I had came from the sword. So I figured it might put the pressure on him a little if I substituted a phony stone. It did.
Well, I hope Dr. Marzak realized before he fell on the sword that his treacherous plans did not succeed.
Oh, I'm sure he did, Anna. Matter of fact, you might say that Dr. Marzak finally got the point.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell, was written by Bob Reif and Adrian Chando, and music by Robert Armbruster, and was produced and directed by Bill Karn. Be with us again next week at this same time when Brian Donlevy, starring in the role of Steve Mitchell, will embark on another Dangerous Assignment. Dangerous Assignment came to you from Hollywood's Radio City. Enjoy The Man Called X next, and later it's Dennis Day on NBC.
That's Dangerous Assignment, February 10th, 1951. Eastern Europe, Kroner Cutlass is the name of that episode. Brian Donlevy starring is heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Next week, Lisa and I will be back here Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning, both days. What's the lineup, Lisa?
Saturday night, we have Richard Diamond, private detective, My Favorite Husband, and Gunsmoke.
Okay.
And Sunday, we've got Dragnet, The Fred Allen Show, and The Whistler.
Okay.
Are you going to whistle for
us? No.
Oh.
Nah. I can do the Whistler whistle.
I know.
Whistle.
Come on.
Nah, that's all right.
I'm
too tired.
Cranky.
Hey, guess who just walked into the studio?
I don't know. I can't think of anybody.
He's got his Cub hat on.
Not ringing a bell here.
He's got a Cub shirt on. He's the one and only Nick DiGilio.
Hey.
And he's here. And you're going to be talking about Hugh Jackman a little bit? Is that what
well,
I heard?
Well, Logan.
Yeah, the Logan, yeah.
Logan, yeah.
That's the last time he's going to do it, huh? That's it?
Yeah.
Even if they pay him a lot more money?
The 10th installment.
Because money sometimes changes people's minds.
It's not going to change his mind.
No.
No.
He's got enough money.
He's been playing the part for 17 years.
So, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
9 films.
Yeah, this is the 10th.
No, this is the 9th.
This is the 9th film?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
I think.
I wonder if there's...
I lost track.
I wonder if there's anybody that's played a character in that
many
films.
I don't think so.
That might
well,
be the...
Same actor?
Yeah, I'm saying because,
yeah,
I mean,
no.
You know, we could think about James Bond and things
right,
like that.
But a lot of actors play that part.
Right. I mean, like Sean Connery probably only played in maybe 5 movies or something like that.
I seriously think it's the 10th installment.
Okay.
But hey,
hey,
I'm definitely not the movie expert here.
Yeah, I'm not a comic book movie expert.
Right.
I'll see them. They come out. I don't read comic books ever.
What's the verdict? Because I'm going tonight, I think, to see King Kong, the new King Kong movie.
I haven't seen it.
Okay,
Doesn't open until next Friday. I hear good things.
No, it's running, isn't it?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
It opens Friday.
Oh.
The 10th.
Okay. I thought it was playing already.
No. Unless you're seeing it at a screening.
No, I'm not seeing it at a screening.
Oh, okay.
So I guess
King Kong doesn't open until next week.
I guess I goofed.
That's the big opener.
Let me ask you a question. The guy who's in that movie, the lead guy.
King Kong?
Yeah, in the new King Kong.
Tom Hiddleston.
I say he's going to be the next James Bond. That's who I'm picking.
Well, he'd be a good choice.
He's my pick for the next James Bond.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he...
Of course, I'm not broccoli.
But he... he's a terrific actor.
I think he looks a little bit like Daniel Craig. He's taller. He's younger. And I just think he would be... I mean, I thought Daniel Craig was a fantastic James Bond. I thought he was... James Bond, I think of as a taller guy. He's not that tall. He's maybe 5'10". But I think of James Bond being a 6'1" kind of guy, like a Sean Connery.
Yeah.
But I think he would be an outstanding.
Yeah, well, he's great. Hiddleston is great. He's got his Marvel money. I mean, he played Loki in the Thor movies and in the Avenger movies, so he's set.
Yeah. So. Have you heard anything about who they're zoning in on?
Yeah.
No. Because Daniel Craig's not doing it again.
Right.
Right. So they're looking for. I think he'd be great. Or me. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I could see that.
Can you? I see it every time I go to sleep. I see myself as James Bond.
Didn't you just say something about 6'1"?
Yeah. Well, in my dreams I am.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Anything can happen in your dreams.
Yeah.
So what's on the show this morning?
Well, we're going to review Logan and the other new movies. And,
right.
Uh, um,